Welcome to Live the Fuel.
Welcome to Live
Welcome
the Fuel.
To Live the Fuel. Focusing on health, business, and lifestyle. And now your host, Scott Mulvaney.
All right. Good day. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another Live the Fuel show. So today I've got a new gentleman coming on, a brand new co-host for you. And this gentleman's coming from 5 hours away from where I'm recording right now, because I record here on the East Coast. And this gentleman's from the UK, a fellow connection from the power of networking, because I can thank Mr. Mark Asquith, who I met a year ago when I launched this show at MapCon. So shout out to MapCon. Shout out to the man Mark Asquith as well. But the gentleman coming on today, he's a multi-award winning entrepreneur. He believes that content marketing is the only way to set business leaders free from the world of mediocre interruption marketing. I can't wait till we dig into that piece, mediocre interruption marketing. He's the founder and driving force behind CMA, the UK's largest membership organization of its time. I want to dig into that a little bit more too, because there's a lot of membership organizations these days. And he's basically raised the bar on talent curation, leadership, personal development. I'm a big fan of that. Community building. His pioneering work has changed the lives of hundreds of businesses, all through the power of content marketing. And there's your CMA, Content Marketing, Content Marketing Academy. The founder and father of Spencer, Chris Marr. Welcome to the show.
It's good to be here, man. Coming at you from the future. Right? Good to be here. Looking forward to getting stuck in.
Absolutely. So what are you up to these days, man? I mean, besides obviously being well-connected to our man, Mark Asquith.
Yeah, what are we up to, man? It's a busy time. Just got back from vacation.
You know what happens when you go on holiday or you take a break? You get a little bit of clarity here and there and some ideas. So I've been hit the ground running the last couple of weeks with a lot of new ideas and trying to develop a few things in the business. So it's been really busy. It's been head down. It's all good though. Challenges, problems, all grateful for them all, because they're helping me to improve things. And so it's all good, man. I'm in a good mood. I feel good, and I've got lots of work to do, so I can't complain.
Well, that's a good thing, right? I mean, we always want to stay busy when we're entrepreneurs. As long as it's productive busyness. I had somebody actually say it to me the other day, like, I want to make sure I'm a productively busy person. And I said, well, that's one way to put it.
Yeah. Well, when you're kind of like in your business person and you always have lots of ideas, you do realize over time that you've got to start picking the best ideas. So that's another challenge in itself. So yeah, you're right. It's about being... there's a good type of busy and there's a bad type of busy. So yeah, you've always got to make sure you're putting your time in the right place.
Well, and I think a lot of people out there, and I think we've all been guilty of it at one point in our lives, is that, you know, we say, oh, I'm just really, really busy. And that makes us feel like we're doing something. But kind of hint of what you just hinted at there was, hey, okay, how are you defining busy? Where are you actually allocating your time and your efforts towards? Because just air quoting, you know, staying busy doesn't mean that you're actually being productive or successful. I mean, you could be wasting a ton of time. And really, I think time is one of the most precious things we have in this world. So I want to make sure, as I'm continuing to grow and I'm working with people over the years, that we're spending our time where it's most valuable.
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, I wrote an article about this a couple of years ago, busyness. It's funny how busyness is almost like business, the word business, you know, it's spelled almost the same.
Yeah.
And I think I had a bit of a revelation with myself that my own busyness was like a burden on everybody else around me. So from that day forward, I've vowed to kind of not put my busyness onto other people. So when people ask you, how are you? How's things? You know, I don't even know if I said it when you asked me, but not to say, oh, it's really, really busy, or I'm tired, or whatever, or kind of like have this, where you're kind of like putting that burden of busyness onto your family and your friends and the people around you, because I think that's exactly what it is. So I think I totally agree with you. There's different types of busyness. And in fact, there's the opposite of that as well, which is another thing, is that I know people that are massively productive, right? Mm-hmm. But they don't actually produce anything.
Right.
So like they've got all the tools, they've got all the techniques, they've got all the things in place, but they actually don't produce anything. So, you know, there's somewhere in the middle there where you're kind of trying to strike that balance between being really busy and being productive as well.
Well, interesting point on that. So would you say that, because they're very productive, right, but they don't actually produce anything. Now, are you saying one of my little things that I've heard out there in the world is there's a great quote, paralysis by analysis. So yeah. are they producing so much, and are they so overly analytical they never actually follow through and execute?
Or... Yeah, so I find like, okay, it's a good question. You're challenging me on my own things here, but yeah. It's good. But I think that what I'm trying to say is that, you know, I know people who have put into place all the kind of the tools, the processes, the systems for being productive, but they never make any sales, right? They're not like, they're not getting the I guess they've been busying themselves with getting the business processes in place that they've kind of forgotten that actually I need to make money and make sales. So it looks as though they're doing really great, but actually there's no money coming in. So they're like, it's almost like they're distracting themselves with productivity when actually they really need to focus on getting people over the fence and buying from them. So that's kind of really where that frustration came from for me, was just through discussions, through coaching people that were like, you know, busying themselves in the wrong place. I guess it comes back to the conversation we're having, which is they were kind of distracting themselves with all the kind of tools and things and systems and processes, but not really focusing on the thing that really mattered the most, which was looking after the customers they had and making some more sales and a revenue and a profit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've spent years in sales and marketing, and one of the things I'm always teaching people about sales is that, especially for the future, is I spent many years working for, and you guys probably have them over there. You ever hear of the company called T-Mobile?
Yeah, T-Mobile, yeah.
Yeah, so I worked for the USA division over here. Actually, I worked for companies that they acquired and then created T-Mobile here. So when I was in that industry before Deutsche Telekom even came over here, because a lot of people don't even know that Deutsche Telekom owns them. And I'm like, well, yeah, they're the parent company. But one awesome thing that we did was all these companies nowadays, they're all about focus groups, right? So you're great. You're gathering information, you're gathering data, and then you got to analyze it. So I spent years as a coach on the front lines of the company, working in the call centers and managing and developing people, coaching them, growing them professionally. And then I moved into more of a corporate gig to be an analyst, to analyze that said data and be more on their methods and procedures teams to help find a way to optimize stuff. So I got a lot of these buzzwords flying out, but the whole point, what I'm getting to, is that one of the coolest things that I still remember to this day that we did was, instead of constantly polling outside of the company, I said, listen, you know, we internally already own 11 different call centers. So each call center could range from 200 to 600 employees, right? So that's a good section of data. And I said, well, also the employees are on the front line of the company. So they hear and deal with what the customers are dealing with, whether you're talking to the customer service division, or we had a retention division that I had coached for a little while, which is basically their whole job was to save the customer. Because here's another little tagline: it's cheaper to save a customer than it is to acquire a new one, because of the whole reinvestment into advertising and marketing, et cetera. So all these different variables. And then we realized, like, wait a minute, why aren't we doing more polling of the inner captive audience, our captive audience? And we can carry that over to even what you're hinting about taking care of your customers. I'm like, well, to be fair, your existing customers are already your captive audience. So what are you doing to reinvest, you know, back into that already almost guaranteed data pond? You know, a little, I'm going to go fishing in that pond. I already have that. I already own that. So I'll be wondering to hear your perspective on that, because you having the CMA, I mean, sounds like you got a lot going on over there. I'm very intrigued to see where you think about these different things I'm bringing up.
I completely agree with that whole philosophy. That's the short answer. We do exactly the same thing. I mean, just to give you a bit of an insight, because I know that you're going to dig into this, or want to dig into this anyway, just how the business model works. And it's within the context of what you're talking about there, that about 18 months ago, I was starting to feel like I was doing too much. So I was being pulled in many different directions with different things, and nothing seemed to be working together. So what I wanted to create was a more congruent business model which worked together. So if I was out speaking, it had a knock-on effect to another part of my business. Or if we've got a new member, that new member would probably want to buy something else from us, and so on and so forth. And what's happened is this four or five things that I do to generate revenue in the business always has a positive impact on where else we make revenue in the business as well. So it is massively about lifetime value. We customer continuity is what it's called, I guess, in the marketing world, where you've got a customer for life and they continue to be a customer year in, year out, and they buy, you know, for us, that means, so it's different for different businesses, but for us, that means possibly becoming a member, then buying a ticket for our annual event in January, then maybe buying a ticket for our annual event in June, then maybe buying a 12-week course from us or something like that, or, you know, so on and so forth. And then their membership is, they're renewed at the year and so on and so forth. So they kind of, they're buying different things from us. We're obviously, the other thing about getting really close to your customers is that you get a really great insight into what challenges and problems they have. And you think, actually, I could create a product or a service around that problem to solve that problem or add more value. So, you know, you're constantly listening to the trends, and I am way more obsessed with the customers I have than the customers I don't have. And I think that's a key strength and something that a lot of people struggle with, I think, because they feel like they've constantly got to be out there recruiting or getting new customers or customer acquisition, whatever you want to call it. And actually they get a lot more value from really getting closer to the customers they've got already, because that breeds more customers just like them. If they go out and talk about you or introduce you to someone else, the likelihood is they're going to be just like them. Mm-hmm. And those are the best customers you can get. And like you said, if you do it properly, you can do it almost for, in fact, you know what? We get new customers, not for free, but for less than free. We actually get them. We get them, it's almost like we're getting paid to get them. It's a strange concept.
Interesting.
So we're getting them, we get our customers for free or less than free, which is awesome, right? It's a great position to be in.
Yeah.
But it's amazing what happens when you focus on the people that already really trust you and respect you and get value from what you do. And if you really study them and get to know them really well and provide as much value for them as you can, you don't even have to ask. They want to introduce you to new people. And that's a great, you know, exactly the position you want to get yourself into.
Well, that's kind of like creating that, basically, what you're talking about is creating that viral, obsessed, like beyond loyal customer, which is a double-edged sword, because number one, as long as you guys keep kicking ass and doing everything the right way, mm-hmm. they're going to love you. You screw up one thing with that person, they may be also the most outspoken person who's frustrated too, because they've had such a great track record. And there's that one time thing may go wrong. And then it's like, oh my God, I hope I built enough of a relationship that they're willing to be a little patient with us and let's get through this together. Do you have an example? Has that ever happened, by the way?
Yeah. So they've had it on a couple of occasions. Like, so it's massively about communication. That's the key to this whole thing. If you
preach
it. Totally. I'm sure everyone on the listening to this is like, yeah, Chris. But it is the key. And sometimes we make a mess of it. Sometimes we screw up. Sometimes we make mistakes. And your hope is that if you're trying to improve and you're trying to do different things, that your audience will forgive you if you make a mistake once or twice or something like that, or some miscommunication, or if it's small enough, you built up enough trust that it's going to be okay. But occasionally you have a customer that isn't actually on the same page as you, even though you thought that they were. And if you do make a mistake, they can berate you publicly for that mistake that you've made, even though it wasn't such a big deal, it was to them. So I think there's times where there's always going to be times like that. I think this is the key part of this is just understanding that if you're trying to change, if you're continually improving and you're trying to improve your business and build upon things, and naturally what will happen is change will occur. Some people like it, some people don't, and mistakes will happen, things will go wrong from time to time. And instead of being surprised as a business owner and be like, oh my God, I can't believe this, you should be saying, well, I can believe this because obviously it's going to happen from time to time. I'm not surprised by this. And also that change happens. People change, you change, and things naturally come to an end as well. So I think like the big part of that for me is just being grateful for having the problems in the first place. Because if someone, I've had a problem recently with a customer who wrote to me and was pissed off about something and just said, and I just said, you know, it's really good to have this problem because it's showing me that things are changing. We're moving, and I'm grateful for the problem. You know, instead of being defensive about it and saying, no, you did this and you did that, it's more like, thanks very much for bringing this to me. You know, this is what we're working on. You know, whatever it might be. Instead of being defensive, you see it in a positive light. So there's a bit of mindset stuff in there somewhere about how to receive that information, that kind of feedback. But you can't be surprised. Things are going to go wrong from time to time. And it's just being able to deal with them effectively. And I have, honestly, I was just literally having this conversation with someone on Facebook today. I make mistakes all the time.
Oh, wait a minute. You're a human being? You're not a robot?
Yeah, apparently I am. But I make mistakes all the time. And I think the key thing as a business owner is just realizing that you are making them, you know, not just continually just making the same mistakes, but actually saying, I could have definitely dealt with that better. And I'm going to try better next time. And I think that's the best you can do.
Well, it's funny we're talking about this whole being human, right? Make mistakes, a great little spot for us to wrap about here, because again, to our listeners, guys, like, I'm literally getting to know Chris along with you, because again, he's 5 hours from me in the UK, so it's not like we can hang out all the time. But the cool thing here is that, like, we're all still making mistakes. Like, I can give you an example right now. Like, I'm about to leave on a vacation with some of my bros, because it's actually a bachelor party. But we're all outdoorsy adrenaline junkies, so we're going to be going up to Vermont. So we got like 8-hour drive tomorrow morning, and then we're there the rest of the week. And we're there just to just, hey, man, help him celebrate. And we're going mountain biking, downhill mountain bike racing. We're going to be doing some golf. That's not really adrenaline junkie for me, but we're trying to create some balance. He likes golf. So the whole point is just a bunch of guys getting together, hanging out, and we're not doing the traditional stuff that everybody thinks happens on a bachelor party. But to get ready for this, I was like, man, I'm going to be taking off like 4 or 5 days. So I try and pride myself on my productivity and my scheduling and blah, blah, blah. Even stuff like this with the podcast, I realized that, oh my God, I've been in such a hurry to get ready for the 100th episode, which I haven't recorded yet. You are technically going to be 101 or 102. And wow. I purposely have been having like a writer's or whatever, a hoster's block of a show, because I'm trying to decide what I want to do for the 100th. And it's got to be me. And now literally I'm just thinking I'm going to make a mistake. And then I thought about it this morning and I was like, who cares? Like, it's your show. If you make a mistake, or if your listeners have concern with it, I've always put this out there. Like, I want my listeners to reach out to me, whether it be through an iTunes review or through a Facebook message or through the website. Like, let me know. Episode 97 or 98, I did the same thing there. I told them, I shouted out to my listeners, my guys, like, get me feedback if you want to hear something or know something. And I think that's the most important thing that we all can be doing in life and in business, is that the people that are closest to us or around us, are we staying receptive? Are we staying open? But also, are we allowing ourselves, you, myself, other entrepreneurs, for example, to make those mistakes? And are we remaining open-minded about it? Because let's be real, the mistakes is how we really learn. I mean, you can't be perfect all the time. I mean, what's your feeling on that, with the power of making a mistake?
Yeah, I think the mistakes are, they lead you to the success you're looking for. That's the key. And then at the moment, it can be painful. And sometimes you can't see past that. You might be angry or emotional.
Especially the big mistakes. It's like, oh my God, I can't believe I just did that.
Exactly. And you just get emotional. You can get emotional about it. The best thing is to just take time sometimes with these things. And I think when you start to realize that your mistakes are the things that make you better and the things that teach you about success every time. It's just, again, it's like an approach or a mindset you need to have around this stuff. You can't get emotional about it, because, like I said already, you're in business. So if you're an entrepreneur or business person, even if you're working for a larger organization, mistakes will happen. If you haven't got the mindset to expect that and therefore be surprised when a mistake happens, then you're not thinking right. You're not thinking clearly about what the mistake, you're not thinking realistically about it.
You know, it's funny you bring that up about large organizations. And a lot of large organizations, I think, are an opportunity, is that some of them have become so choked by policy and procedure and methodologies that they're not allowing that creative freedom. And it's funny we're bringing this up, because I'm just blanking on his entire name, founder of LinkedIn, Reed. Anyway, Reed launched his own show, a podcast show. And he's now bringing on all these, entrepreneurial visionaries, big powerhouses. I mean, I like the show. If you haven't checked it out, man, check it out. It's pretty cool. But the point was, he brought on, he was talking about Facebook, for example. Facebook has gotten so massive. There's just so much data. Their server farms must be huge to handle all that bandwidth and capacity and memory and everything else. But the most important thing was they realized that, he wanted to always give them creative freedom. And so they would just publish an update to Facebook, and then if something broke, it broke. Well, then he finally realized, okay, well, it's so big that you can't really break the entire thing. Maybe we should consider breaking little things. So mm-hmm. then he gave the engineers the ability to do small releases. So picture taking the entire Facebook organization, and then an engineer can take a sampling of the customer base, and he can just release that one new tweak or one new feature or one new enhancement to this set group. So now they basically have kind of created virtual Facebooks within Facebook. So if you're familiar with virtual hosting and the IT world and stuff like that, that's basically what they did. So the engineers still have the creative freedom and the ability to make mistakes. They've just found a way to make it much more, I guess, customer friendly, so you're not breaking the entire system. And I really mm-hmm. enjoy that, because they could have looked at it as, well, Facebook's too big now. We can't be making those crazy little random mistakes. Or they went about the way they did it and say, no, we want to keep seeing this creative freedom from our engineers. We want to have them keep trying to come out with something new and cool for the users. So let's just create mini Facebooks. I thought that was that was a cool thing. So
yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, the biggest killer of most businesses is complacency, isn't it? Either thinking you know it all and you don't need to learn anything new, or just completely dismissing the fact that you need to grow and personally and professionally. So yeah, I completely agree with that. You've got to find ways to keep moving forward all the time.
Now, CMA, I mean, how big, I mean, I guess that's a good question. CMA, I mean, membership organizations, there's lots of them. There's different scales, different capacities. Some are trying to go vertically. Some are trying to go horizontally. Like, what is your kind of mastermind brainchild behind when you created CMA as an organization as far as membership? Because I'm a member of a lot of membership organizations. So I'm very intrigued to see how you kind of came about that. Because, again, are you trying to go vertically and horizontally? Like, can you help us understand that a little bit more about your methodology there?
Mm-hmm. I think there's a bit of a story here. I don't know if you want to dig in, how deep you want to go into this, but
I love backstories, man. So
right, okay. So let me start let me create some open loops here, and then we can fill in the gap. So like, I'm 35 years old now, right?
All right.
I started my own business when I was 31, so it's been 4 years or so I've been in business for. Just prior to that, I did my business degree at university. So that was between 29 and 31. And before that, I worked in a larger organization for 10 years, right? So since I was 19 years old, I worked in leadership and management. So that's kind of like my career to date, if you will. The business that we started today started off as a client services business. So we're a consulting agency business for marketing for small businesses, small to medium enterprises. So that's how the business started. And the CMA, as you see it now, this branding is less than 6 months old. We invested a lot of money into our brand, time and effort and money into our brand to try and elevate the whole thing. And we had ran a client services business right up until about October last year, October 2016. And that's when we transitioned from a client services business into a membership business. So we have been building the membership business kind of in the background for about 18 months or so until we made that transition. So as our clients were leaving and our projects were ending, we weren't replacing those clients at all. And we were kind of relying on the membership business to kind of build up at the same time. So but what I knew, what we've come to know and understand, is that you can't really do, especially if you run a really small business, you can't run a client services business and a membership business at the same time. So we really needed to focus on one thing and build it really well. I can see us working with clients again in the future, but not just right now while we're trying to build this membership business. So the membership business is really quite young, and it's got, I'd say we'd ran a beta version of our membership for probably the last 12 months, I think, until we started to do all the rebranding and we changed our platforms, and we're kind of like really building out the foundations for growth now. So it's been, there's been a few tipping points, a few kind of little, you know, what you maybe call a pivot or changes in the business. And there's been a lot of reasons for that in terms of my own lifestyle and the business that I want to run and that I'm interested in as well. I was really lost enthusiasm and passion for the client services businesses. There's a lot of things that I just don't like about it. And the teaching, essentially that's what a membership organization is a teaching organization where you're curating content and you're coaching and you're
interesting,
you know, creating live trainings, and you're creating content that people can learn from and so they can grow their business. that leans more directly into my core strengths as a just who I am. You know, I love to teach. So we had to find a way that we had to find a business model that would kind of tick a lot of boxes in terms of the type of business I wanted to run, the kind of lifestyle I wanted to have, and the type of kind of job, the jobs that I want to do, and the money that I want to obviously make as well. So there's a lot of considerations in it. So it's not been, I guess, to answer your question a bit more directly, it's not always been a membership organization. That kind of
starts somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm still of that mindset now, though. The membership organization might not be the thing in a couple of years. It might change. I've got to consider the fact that this might not be the way that I always make an income or make a living. So
it feels right now, though.
It's great right now. And I do believe that it's something I'm investing in massively and something that I think will build the future. But say if something happens further down the line and it's like, actually, you know what, this isn't working anymore, I'm more than happy to continue to make a change. The good thing about what we did in the big change that we had, you know, about a year ago now, is that we still managed to keep our core audience, right? So I'm hoping that that'll be what happens in the future. Is it's not a pivot. It's more of a, just an organic maturity, growth. I don't know. We're still in the same space. We've just got a slightly different business model, and we've grown. We're making more money. I have more time. I feel better, much more passionate about it. As a result of that, it's really elevated everything for me. So, changing business model has been fantastic.
I like what you're talking about, because in my consulting, I talk to people about, and I'm guilty of it myself still, is that I'm for example, I have one huge client. Like they take most of my time. And we all know in the entrepreneurial space, now granted, like she really can't do it without me, so I'm not really worried about it. And we're friends and everything else. But I'm like, yeah, I hate's a strong word, but I really don't like still being that heavily anchored to one.
Yeah.
We'll just call it source of income, right? There's multiple sources of income in my life, but that's a big one, right? And the whole goal here is that, in my experience, is I'm always trying to teach people how to diversify your income, right? Bring in other streams. So you're not so heavily weighted on that one area. And that's kind of what you're hinting at here, is that, well, in the client model, there's only so many clients you can also manage too in that design, right? Or then you got to start growing your team and having more people. And then do you have a climate management team and yada, yada, yada. Now, to be fair, in a membership organization, you could technically take on limitless members if you're building a content platform that is replicatable, which just sounds like what you're doing. So you can have unlimited members because you're building all your teaching, educational videos, a library, et cetera. So it's all there. You're not having to, like, literally every time you onboard a new member, it's like, okay, well, I'm going to spend all this time with you. Like, well, not necessarily. Is that what I'm hearing from you? Is it's you're getting more of that horizontal growth?
Yeah, there's a lot of those things are really important. So the business model side of things was key. There's a lot of things, there's maybe four or five things that really mattered to me when we're building it. The membership model was that it was a reliable source of income, so it was subscription based. It was a one to many model, right? So I could teach many people at once of the same thing. I mean, pricing wise as well, like a year of membership is the same price as a day of consulting. So if you're a small business and you want support, you can get it at a really affordable price, like ridiculously cheap, for like a pound a day or something like that, or a dollar a day, you know? So that was really key for me as well. Multiple income streams, kind of touched on this a little bit already, but multiple income streams was really key, but not multiple income streams that were too diverse. I wanted each revenue stream to actually link directly to the other revenue streams.
Play off of each other. Right.
Yeah, they have to be congruent with each other, because you can't be like, who's a, shared an example with the other day, who is a hair salon or a stylist that also did hire for Bouncy Castle hire or something like that, right? The two just don't, I get maybe this doesn't make any sense, right? So it's kind of like trying to find a congruent business model that has multiple revenue streams. So we've got like four or five main revenue streams that all link to each other. Like, and it's a great business model to have, so that wherever you put your effort in, it's building the other places as well. It's building those other revenue streams out too. So it's great. So scalability, reliability, predictability, That one-to-many model. So like my impact I can make in my capacity, right? So you're right, capacity is a big factor. How many clients can I realistically look after as a business manager? Also, I've got to run the business, do the marketing, the sales. What if something goes wrong? Recruitment, HR, discipline, team management, leadership. If you're building out an agency, for example, you're just going to have to get team members in, account management, creative. And
now you're increasing overhead.
Exactly. So there's the risk associated with that too. So and that's great. I know a bunch of agency owners that love the agency lifestyle. It just wasn't for me. Mm-hmm. It's just not going to work for me. So what I've done is we've got a small business. I run the business myself. I have a business manager. I've also got a bookkeeper, and I use freelancers when I need them to do certain things like video editing and course, all that kind of stuff. Right. So I can, and this is, you know, I reckon that I can have a seven-figure business without having a team, right? And we're on the growth path of that. And it's not unrealistic anymore to be able to think like that. So I can take my laptop that I've got here. I'm at home just now. You know, I could be in my office. I could be on holiday. I could be doing whatever. And I can run my business from those locations. And that was really important for me too.
Well, that was the beauty of, it's kind of funny you talk about the whole lifestyle piece there, is that really, whether you have a multiple member organization or what you've built as far as employees, for example, or team members, that's the beauty of where we're at today. Is I remind people, my guys, like with a smartphone and a laptop, hell, even sometimes just with a smartphone, I could run most of what I do from my iPhone. I mean, it's thanks to Google Drive, and I use Trello for project management as an app and things of that nature. It's like, I'm pretty mobile. It's not bad at all. I mean, now granted, the only thing I'm going to be anchored to is the requirement of internet. But even stuff like this with the podcast, I realized, like, you know what? Maybe for the 100th episode, I'm just going to take my microphones, because I've got a portable recorder and everything with me, and I'm just going to do it in Vermont.
Yeah.
So we can do that.
Of course you can. I mean, I've got a studio at home with all the microphones set up and stuff. Studio at the office. But I've used this Sennheiser PC set. I used this for my first 30 episodes of my podcast or something like that. It cost £30, like maybe $25 or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's good enough. It's good enough, you know, to do online calls and all the rest of it. So there are ways to do this now. You don't have to think in a traditional mindset if you want to have a lifestyle. A good example of this actually is that I knew that I wanted speaking to be a big part of my career going forward. So I'm investing a lot of time and training and all the rest of it, but I couldn't see how I could run a client services business and still be able to travel the world and do speaking without having a big team and without it being, and I know people that this is their life, is just so stressful because they've got a team back in London office, yet they're trying to speak all over the world and they can't do both. They can't build a speaking career and travel and have an agency, or they're finding it very difficult to do so. So I thought to myself, well, if I want to build a speaking career, I'm going to have a business that allows me, at least in the short term, you know, for the next 2 or 3 years, that allows me to do that. What if I want to write a book? I'm going to have to, you know, that might take me a couple of months to do all that. How can I do that without servicing my clients, you know? And I needed a business that was going to allow me to have the flexibility around my own time, so I can work hard when I want to, and I can do other things when I want to as well. And as long as you're communicating with your customers and they understand what to expect when they join your membership or they become a customer, then I think you can really set things up the way that you want them to, and you can be in total control. So figuring out what lifestyle you want and which business model can support that well within your reach.
I love that. And actually, while I'm talking to you, I'm actually going to share my screen, because I've had your website up here while you've been talking about that. And one of the photos on your website is you speaking. So I was like, Oh, this is perfect. You're talking about speaking. And you and I have something in common, sir. That's been one of my goals too. I've always had the gift of gab, and from spending years in different coaching roles, like I hinted from T-Mobile, but I've also I've worked with a kids youth ski race team in my free time. I've been a cycling coach. I'm currently a CrossFit coach. I've always had coaching in my life. And I just realized that I love teaching, like you said, but also the power of speaking, because I've done a little bit, my speaking has increased a little bit over the past year or two, and I'm loving it. And I was like, you know what? I have 3 more speaking events this year, and that's more than I've ever done. So I was like, okay, it's starting to increase. But to your point, we got to build a lifestyle around that allows it. And and the good thing is, like, with your business, and again, for our listeners, guys, like, it's CMA, but it's the Content Marketing Academy .co for company, and then .uk, and then you can get right to his site. And again, we'll have all this stuff linked in the show notes on the website. We always put together very in-depth stuff, Chris, so anything else that you want to share,
cool.
I'll have it all. I have all your social media stuff. It'll be all linked in and everything. But, like, I think for me, kind of rewind back to your earlier point on you realizing that you wanted to teach, and obviously that's the power of public speaking too, right? We're in the front of a room of people teaching them something or getting them to know more about you. Like, when did that click in? When did that kind of, like, oh my God, I want to speak and I want that more mobile lifestyle? Besides the fact that you're the proud father of Spencer, I'm guessing there's some flexibility around that too. Like, it probably all gets intertwined, but when did that really all of a sudden start, like, your epiphany hit you?
Okay, so I'll split this into two. I'll split into the speaking side, and then the lifestyle thing came later. So I started, my first real job, career job, was when I was 19 years old. So this is going back 16 years ago. And that's when I started working in a larger organization. It was the management role that I had there. I had to train and run workshops and do speaking internally from that first day that I started. So I've been doing, like, similar to yourself, Scott, is that I did it for years. Like, I was trained in it without even really knowing that that was what I was learning. So I was in front of large audiences doing training and teaching and workshops, and actually being trained in facilitation as well at a formal level from a very young age.
We have a lot in common, sir. I started when I was 18.
Yeah, so it's like you look back on that time as a career and think, well, I actually learned a lot without even realizing that that's what I was learning and how useful that's been now. And it's no surprise that one of the first things I did when I started my business was advertise and sell a workshop, right? So, you know, looking back on all this now, it kind of makes a lot of sense that I should be in front of an audience and teaching and running workshops. And I absolutely love facilitating workshops and doing speaking. And I think there's two big parts of the story I think that are important though. One is that using what I'd learned from the 10 years I was in that career and really thinking about how I've, you know, trying to unpack that, but also realizing that I was nowhere near as good as I either thought I was or needed to be, because I've now, over the course of the last 4 years, I've met a lot of professional speakers and they are amazing at what they do. Mm. So I've still got, and in fact, they'll even say this themselves, they've got a lot of learning to do as well, but I have got a ton of learning to do in this space if I want to be a professional speaker. One of the things I've done is invest heavily in mentoring and coaching for my own communication styles, and, you know, traveling to Philly this year to go to Heroic Public Speaking. We're doing lots of different things just to really get up to speed and make sure that I can, like, hone this craft. So it's taken, the speaking side of things has been in me, I think, for a long, long time, but to do it at a professional level where you're getting paid, where you could essentially earn really good income from just speaking alone.
Yes.
That's a different level. That takes it up a level. I'm not talking about a few thousand dollars a gig. You know, we want to push it into, you know, how are these people earning five figures a gig?
I call it the Tony Robbins level.
Yeah, exactly. The Tony Robbins level. So there's this whole spectrum, right? And I think this is one of my top two or three things that I'm working on heavily at the moment. And speaking's a big part of it. I mean, it bleeds into everything else. Even just doing a podcast is, you know, you're communicating verbally. It's a big deal as well. So I think, like, speaking separately from lifestyle it's been a massive investment of mine over the last couple of years, especially mainly triggered by meeting a guy called Marcus Sheridan, who's had a massive influence on me in terms of communication, and also working with loads of pro speakers, because we have our live event over here in the UK. So I've had to curate and pay and book and hire loads of professional speakers now. So getting a feel for, like, what is a professional level? What's the difference between where I am now and where they are? How can I, you know, what does my journey look like? How can I put myself in a position to get those opportunities?
Well, for someone like yourself, since you have CMA, but then you have your t-shirt actually says CMA Live. So I love that. Yeah. But for the listeners, I mean, for yourself also, like, to you as an organization owner, as a membership organization, trying to bring in valuable people, like what defines to you right now today a good speaker, since you're also trying to get into it yourself? And I love the fact that, but real quick, you hinted about the power of mentorship and coaching. Okay. Anybody who's looking to level up in anything in your life, we all need to realize that we can't do this ourselves. It's important to find somebody that can help guide you or take you to the next step. So,
yeah. Yeah. For every problem you've got, someone else has had it and solved it. So figure out who that person is and ask them. Yeah, totally. I agree with that. So the question is about good speaker, right? So yeah, I've got a couple of things on this. I mean, just because this is something I can just share with you my own experience, I guess. What I've uncovered is that just because someone's written a lot of books and has got some sort of like authoritative status in the marketplace, or has a great concept, or written a white paper on something, or has a industry leading trend, or is a really successful entrepreneur, does not make them a good speaker.
Yes.
Right. That's like 100% true. Speaking is a craft and a skill in its own category. And I didn't really fully appreciate this until I started seeing the good, the bad, and the ugly of speaking. So I think that's one thing, is you can't just make an assumption because someone has been massively successful with something, they're going to be able to get up onto stage and have an impact with an audience. Okay, so that's one thing for sure. But what makes a great speaker is someone that doesn't patronize an audience, right? That really makes you feel that they're humble. Usually, you know, the people that I've met are the best, are the most humble people that I've ever met. And they've got no ego about them. None. Like, no ego at all. They want you to win. So they put everything into making the audience the hero of everything that they do. And they put everything into it as well. Like, they would say something like, it's my responsibility to serve my audience. That's my job. That's why I'm here today, is to serve you. This is not about me. This is not about how many awards I've won. This is not about how much success I've had. This is about how I can help you overcome a problem, or help you with a challenge, or whatever that might be. That really makes a great speaker. It's more about mindset and philosophy than anything else. And then just honing that craft of communication. So a lot of great speakers, I mean, the bad ones, you know, going for the bad ones, the ones that read off their slides, have no interaction with the audience and are kind of monotone, versus the other ones that are like interacting with the audience, asking questions, you know, and understanding how to get the most out of people while they're there. So I think there's a whole spectrum in there. And yeah, like I said, I've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. And whether it's I would say it's a little bit of a burden, but knowing what makes a great speaker, every time I'm at an event and say there's like 10 speakers at an event and I sit through them all, one of them will be great. And the other nine won't be. And that is
pretty true, actually. It's always like that diamond in the rough, the one that shines brighter than everything else.
Yeah, it's unfortunately true. It's an unregulated industry. A lot of event organizers as well, curators, don't really know what makes a great speaker. And I think if you've got, the great thing about where I'm sitting right now and the experience I've had over the last 3 or 4 years has put me in a really good position, because not only do I curate my own events and speakers, I am also speaking. So I've kind of got it, like, it's a great sort of like sort of crossroads to be in, because I can appreciate what the curator is trying to do, the organizer of the event. I know what I need to do to be a good speaker, I think, and I understand the audience interaction as well, and trying, so I can see from like multiple perspectives. And I think that's a good position to be in terms of how to do a better job, I guess.
I think that's good for anything in life. I mean, anytime you can finally get yourself into a mental place where you can understand all the angles or all of the people involved, their perspective, right? Whether you be you could be just the event manager versus the event founder versus the person on the team maybe organizing the speakers. Like each of those three people right there may have a different perspective, and they're going to have to team up, sit down, and figure out what they're looking for out of a great speaker for that event, let alone the audience and the other speakers coming to that. And yeah. I'm just glad you helped clarify that, because I can guarantee you I've been to events where, oh, well, somebody's got all this credentials. They've got multiple books, New York Times bestseller, yada, yada, yada. They suck at talking to people. I mean, just listen, stick to your writing. You're a great author and your books are captivating, and I've learned a lot from them. But wow, if you plan on continuing to speak, they've got a lot of work to do. And yeah. I've seen that often with some authors. So
I think most people have a lot of work to do on speaking. Like I really believe that a lot of people don't know what they don't know when it comes to speaking. Like they've talked a bunch of times and everyone seemed like it was great and enjoyed it, reasonably good feedback, but there's always room for like just up in your game. And I think that's really important. I mean, we schooled speakers. That's part of CMA. We have something called the World Class Communication Workshop that we run every year. We're starting a new business around it, actually. We're going to have a podcast called The World Class Communicator. And I've interviewed a dozen or so professional business speakers about this topic to really unpack it for people so they can understand how to build a business with speaking. You know, what does that business model look like and how does it work? There's loads of different ways. But so we've schooled about 60 students so far in the last year. And a lot of them, I'd say half, have gone from the student to stage. Like, so half have made it. So in the last year, out of the 60 we've taught, about half have gone to stage now. So they've went from the classroom to being on the stage, and some of them have even gone to being paid speakers now, which is good. So I feel like, you know, back to kind of like the business side of things, I think speaking, content marketing, you know, this doing stuff like this, networking, which we've already talked about, those three things really build a business. I'd say they're definitely in the top, say, maybe the top five or six things that you should be doing to build your business. Speaking is definitely in there, I would say.
I love that. Well, and out of honor to you for networking, if you need somebody else to help you with the growing the whole communication podcast, I had on, are you familiar with Ugg Boots?
Ugg Boots, yeah.
Yeah. So the founder, Brian Smith, has been on the show. And he's been building his career as a speaker. So because now that he, you know, years ago sold his company for millions of dollars, that's what he decided to do next. It just kind of brings it full circle where you talk about the lifestyle, whereas before he was too busy building a company and building something successful in a brand that stood alone. And then he finally sells it. And now he's got the freedom to take all that knowledge and everything he's attained over those years and now build a speaking career. So
that's really interesting. I think it's you've made some really good points in there as well. I think a lot of people try to do it too early in their career and they've not really got anything to say or a story to share. I think it's important to realize that even like a lot as an entrepreneur, you feel like you've got to do all of these things like podcasting, speaking, workshops, all the stuff, all that kind of stuff. But I tell you, there's something to be said for like building something successful first and really just focusing on that and then realizing that you can bring all these other elements in when you've really got some impact to make. I think it's really good to hear that.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's a little weird because when I look at him, I mean, he has a very common name, Brian Smith. So he's unfortunately, or fortunately and unfortunately, he's now permanently tied to the UGG brand. Like he calls himself, you know, the UGG founder on all the social media and stuff like that, because Brian Smith is such a common name, he needed to do that. So as long as UGG keeps kicking butt and taking names, at least he's still got that claim to fame.
The thing is that it's just part of his story. Nobody else is going to be able to make up that story. Whether UGG continues to be a success or not, it's still his story.
Yeah, and he built it from nothing. He built it from a guy in Australia, and now he lives here in the US. And
I bet you he loves telling the story as well. Do you know what I mean?
It was good. I'm saying that's why I got to get you guys connected, because I think you and him will geek out really, really well. And like he and I are talking about, like, this guy has got to be in his 60s at least. And I can't remember his name. I think he's 67. And he still goes surfing every day. He's a snowboarder in the ski season. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, that's awesome. Like, that's part of my whole master plan. Everything that I do day in and day out, my adrenaline junkie lifestyle, like that's what I'm talking about. He has never lost those important lifestyle balances, and they're still a part of him to this day. And we had a really, really good episode. So I really enjoyed that. But that's why I'm like, I think that he'd be perfect to help get you on that whole, because are you building up like a bank of episodes before you launch that new podcast?
Yeah. They're all, I've done about four, I think I've done 14 interviews just now. So they're all going to be released in seasons as well. So in batches of sixes probably.
Okay. There you go.
So that's all happening in the background. Just it's like starting a new business. But yeah, I'd love to meet Brian. That sounds great. I'd love that connection.
And he's a super nice guy. Like totally laid back. And again, I know to you, you don't have an accent, but for me, it's like, between your accent and his accent, the Aussie accent, yeah. Like I think you guys would have a fun episode that way too. So
we got on well with the Aussies.
Yeah,
for sure.
Oh, they're fun guys, that's for sure. So and ladies actually, but Well, I want to respect your time as well, and we've already had a solid show here today. So, I mean, with CMA Live, everything else that's going on, I mean, is there anything that we've missed on that our audience should really know more about you? And obviously, we can even use this to transition towards the final words of the episode, which I give to the co-host. It's you and something you want to leave behind. But I just want to make sure we're honoring you, and since you've honored us by coming on and helping host the show.
I think we've covered a lot there. I think the key, you know, we could go on and on sharing resources and tools and all that kind of good stuff. I just think, like, really, a lot of the stuff I've shared today is more of kind of like how I want to build my business. I think the key thing is you got to figure that out for yourself. You know, you got to stay true to yourself. Don't get too distracted with what other people, like, I ignore pretty much all my competition. I've got no interest in that. They don't pay my bills, for example. So what's the point? So I try and just really think to myself, what kind of business do I want to build and how do I want to build it? You know, simple things like I don't have any pop-ups on my website because that doesn't build trust. That's not really the kind of business I'm in.
Thank you.
But someone else might be like, no, it works. You're going to get like conversion rates and all this. I'm like, yeah, but that's for you. It's not for me. And I know in his, I think the key thing is just building on that philosophy all the time. So really just try and hone your own philosophy and your own beliefs about how you want to build your business. And I think if you can figure that out for yourself, it gives you real strength and confidence in your, just in everything, sales and marketing and communication. And I'm way more confident now, you know, 3 or 4 years into business than I was back then. And that's just come from personal growth. So just don't stop learning. Keep building out whatever it is you need to build and you will become successful and whatever that means to you. I think it's just key to just keep moving forward all the time. Embrace, and like I said already, embrace those mistakes. You know, I guess the best throwaway statement there is the obstacle is the way, you know, Ryan Holiday. That's the key philosophy, I think, is to realize that everything you do, whether it's success or failure, is going to make you stronger and better at whatever it is you want to do. I think that's it. I mean, it doesn't matter what I've done. It's, what are you going to do?
I love that, man. Great. Those are powerful words. Thank you, sir. See, we all come to a strong end in the end. I love that. Well, again, to our listeners, and hang tight, I'm going to give you a proper goodbye, but to our listeners, guys, again, and I'm actually real quick for the video people, I'm going to share the screen again just so you guys have the website. But again, on his words that he just closed out with today, if you are struggling and you are not able to get to that next step, because we're supposed to be putting in the reps and making those mistakes and learning from those things, eventually you may reach a point where it's time to find a coach. It's time to find a mentor. Maybe it's time to find a membership organization like with CMA. So again, guys, it's the tools are out there. The resources are out there. The words that Chris has shared with us today are powerful. But keep taking those steps. Keep moving forward, as he said. Keep making those mistakes. Keep learning. And then if you need help, reach out. All right? You got to reach out and keep moving forward. So, Chris Marr, thank you for joining us today. Again, hang tight. I'm going to say you a proper goodbye. But again, to our listeners, guys, this is what we're all about. All right? So keep living the fired up epic life. And we'll talk to you guys again soon. Hey there, Live the Fuel fans. Quick commercial break. Before we close out the episode, just wanted to give you some extra tips and tricks before we send you on your way. So again, thank you again for listening to the Live the Fuel show. I hope you got a lot out of this recent episode. More importantly, please subscribe to the show if you haven't subscribed yet. Stay in touch. Get me some feedback. Submit a review on iTunes or Stitcher and get us the voice of you, the listener, so we can build this content back into the show and make sure that I'm actually taking you, the listener, into this design and future as Live the Fuel grows. So again, subscribe, submit a review, stay in touch. Heck, on that point, go visit livethefueltank.com. Livethefueltank.com. That will take you to the link to our private Facebook group community where you can join and I can stay more in touch with you going forward outside of the podcast world. All right, last quick little piece here for you guys, some extra value. One, go to livethefuel.com main page. You'll see on there we have our free resources guide. If you are looking for free content and not having to pay for it, consider getting on my email list. You click on the button, send me my copy, get your Super Sevens resources guide. There's over 21 of my favorite online resources that I built into this little electronic guide for you guys. There's no cost. It'll just be emailed to you just by hopping on my email. Again, just thank you for listening. I want to give you some value. Second piece of my little extra nuggets of knowledge, if you want to call it this, is go to the resources section on the site. In there, I have three columns, health, business, lifestyle. And two, right off the bat, that I want to make sure you guys are taking advantage of is number one, eatpillynuts.com. And number two, villacapelli.com. Their logos are on the site. You got a big bowl of nuts there. And you got a cool big V, Power V logo. Both of those, if you use the discount code FUEL, F-U-E-L, you will get 10% off at checkout. So take advantage of that, please, and thank you. And more importantly, there's other companies linked on there. My nutritional and health alignment with Isagenix since 2010. The Pure Vitamin Club company for their kick-ass magnesium B12 and an awesome multi-cap. There's some additional business resources on there. Number one, Singularis IT. I go mountain biking and road cycling with the founder. This is a legitimate IT company. I don't care where you are in the world. You can use their services. We're talking about serious white glove level services. I've moved all of my IT solutions over to them, and I outsource them regularly for any future and onboarding clients down the road. And lastly, but not leastly, David Studio. If you have no clue who this guy is, guess what? He is my new audio engineer. This is the guy I've been having making it happen behind the scenes. I found him through the Fiverr world. So if you search for David, D-A-V-I-D, Studio on Fiverr, you can track this guy down. But guess what? He's also on the Upwork platform. He's on the People Per Hour platform. You can search for him through his real name. I've never literally physically met this guy or talked to him in person. We have been just met through the online world. But if you search for E-M-I-N, that's I believe pronounced Emin, and Fikic, which is F as in Frank, I-K-I-C, you can search for him in Upwork, People Per Hour. Oh, more importantly, just go to Fiverr like I did. But if you are a podcaster or somebody just looking to get quality audio engineering, this is your guy. So again, guys, I'll let you get back to your day. Thanks again for listening to Live the Fuel. We'll talk to you guys again soon.
Thank you for listening to Live the Fuel. Visit us at livethefuel.com. Stay connected on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and more at Live the Fuel. Live the fired up, epic life. Hashtag Live the Fuel.